Radio Prague News.
The Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer has rejected a letter of resignation from the Minister for Human Rights and Minorities. Four people, including a member of the Prague Castle Guard, have been charged with the production and sale of illegal drugs. Three Czech businessmen have made this year's Forbes Rich List. The Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer has rejected an offer by the Minister for Human Rights and Minorities to resign after talking personally with the Human Rights Minister Michal Kocáb on Wednesday. The minister handed over a letter of resignation after a Czech tabloid published allegations he had been having an affair with his spokeswoman, Leila Abbas. She has already stepped down from her post, but will remain for a two-week period. A government spokesman said that the Prime Minister valued Mr. Kocáb's attempt to deal with the situation fairly, but made clear there was no reason for him to resign at this time. Michal Kocáb, who was nominated to the cabinet by the Green Party, also served as a human rights minister in the previous Czech government. Police from the country's National Anti-Drug Center say they arrested a group of four individuals in February suspected of the illegal manufacture and sale of marijuana and cocaine. Defense Ministry spokeswoman Lucie Kubovičová said that one of the four suspects is a member of the Prague Castle Guard. If found guilty, each of these suspects could spend up to 10 years in prison. Three of the people are Czech nationals, one is from the Netherlands. Police monitored the group over several months, determining it operated in Prague and central Bohemia. Detectives moved in during an attempted sale of 0.5 kilo of cocaine and 3 kilos of marijuana in Prague's Letňany. Three Czech business tycoons have made this year's Forbes Rich List. Petr Kellner is the richest of the three, according to the U.S. business magazine, with assets valued at $7.6 billion U.S. dollars. The co-owner of investment group PPF is reported to be the 89th wealthiest person in the world. Zdeněk Bakala, who owns the coal mining company OKD, is ranked 828th with $1.2 billion U.S. dollars, while Agrofert owner Andrei Babiš is 937th on the Forbes list with $1 billion. The Social Democrats have taken down snapshots of opponents at their political rallies that were posted on the party's website, awaiting a decision by the Office for Personal Data Protection. The party posted the photos it said earlier to determine whether protesters appeared at different rallies across the country, an indication they might be professionally organized by a rival political party. In posting the photos, the Social Democrats, however, may have breached individuals' right to privacy. The chairman of the Office for Private Data Protection, Igor Niemet, said that no political party could post such pictures without individuals' consent. An official decision on the case is expected to be reached by his bureau within 1 week. The British press has reported that Czech goalkeeper Petr Čech, who plays for Chelsea, could return to the pitch earlier than previously expected, in 10 days' time. The footballer suffered a leg injury in late February in a Champions League game between Chelsea and Inter Milan. Doctors' assessment suggested Čech would be out for at least a month, but The Guardian has reported the player is recovering quickly. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, as unemployment bites, labor officers are told to get tough on work permits for foreigners. Does data retention by mobile phone operators and internet providers violate people's right to privacy? We'll bring you another report from the One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries in Prague. And in Panorama, you can find out how women's hockey is doing in the Czech Republic.
I think that women's hockey here is just kind of starting to get noticed and recognized a little bit. Like, now that women's hockey's been in the Olympics for a couple years, I think people are starting to see it more and it's being more recognized as a sport.
All that coming up, so do please stay with us. Czech labour offices have been instructed to take a tougher line on permits for foreigners seeking work in the country or those wanting to prolong their existing permits. The instruction is a direct result of the mounting number of jobless Czechs. Chris Johnstone reports on the new recommendation and who it affects.
The new line on foreign work permits came down from the Ministry of Labour and Social Affairs this week. Basically, it wants labour offices not to prolong current permits for foreigners if a Czech can fill the position, and above all, not to give out new permits. The ministry says it is a direct result of higher Czech unemployment and the desire to get Czechs back in work where possible. Štěpánka Filipová is spokesman at the ministry. She stresses that labour offices have been told to take a flexible approach, and this is not a blanket ban.
The priority of the Ministry of Labour and Social Affairs is to get as many Czech citizens back to work as possible and thereby improve their living standards. That is why the Ministry made this recommendation. Having said this, the limitations on foreigners from third countries should take place in a sensitive way with regard to the circumstances of individuals and the labour market of specific regions.
According to the latest figures for February, Czech unemployment now stands at 9.9%. At the same time, there are around 66,000 workers from so-called third countries, those not from the European Union, European Free Trade Area, or Switzerland. Most of these are Ukrainians, Moldovans, and Mongolians, followed by Russians and Vietnamese. But those working with some of those foreign workers wonder whether labour offices will really take such a sensitive approach under the new guidelines and question the fairness of shutting the door to such workers when times get tough. Zita Kardernova is chairwoman of Bridge for Human Rights, an association which helps foreign workers integrate in the eastern city of Pardubice.
I think the offices should take account how long the foreigners have been here, how long they have been working in these positions, and if they are here with families or not, and so on. In any case, this is not an ideal situation when they are allowed here before the so-called crisis and then told they cannot stay. It personally strikes me as not very fair just to say goodbye, and we are freeing up this position for someone else.
She also wonders whether the ministry's tougher approach might not just force more foreign workers to drop out of sight and become part of the illegal economy.
I personally think that it will produce more illegals. These foreign workers do not want to go home because they must pay back debts they have incurred in their countries. I do not think this is a good solution.
She adds that in any case, Czech companies will probably still seek to employ foreign workers when they can, because they are cheaper, work longer hours, and often do work most Czechs still prefer to shun.
Chris Johnstone with that report. Now, the watchdog organisation Euridicum Remedium is proposing that the European Directive for Data Retention be looked into by the Czech Constitutional Court to assess if it is in line with the Czech Constitution. The proposal, which has backing from 46 Parliament deputies, aims to stop the mandatory storage of technical data by communication providers implemented since 2006 on the grounds of the said EU directive. Sarah Baruch Rufka talked to the watchdog's Philip Buspischil about what exactly data retention is and how it could violate people's right to privacy.
Data retention is generally means that operators of mobile telephone companies as well as internet providers are obliged to collect and to store data of the users, so-called technical data, but in fact the data that tells very much on the behavior of the users, on their contacts, on their social life, and so on.
You have prepared a proposal to have the law on data retention looked into by the Constitutional Court. Can you tell me a little bit about what kind of change in law you are hoping for?
Basically, we were very much inspired by similar moves of organizations of our kind in Germany, where just last week Constitutional Court ordered to deletion of all the stored data from their national law providing data retention. And we hope for the very similar goal. And also we want to make the officials and the ministries to prepare new legislation that would provide much higher protection of the data, that would limit the access to the data and also will limit the amount of stored data on such communication.
You mentioned Germany in comparison to other European countries. How is the Czech law on data retention? Is it relatively liberal or is it rather strict?
I would say that it is not the law that would be much more strict than in other countries, because anyway, the national legislation in almost all the European states are anyway implementing a European data retention directive. What is important distinction is actual practice, because there are some European states, like for instance Austria, that haven't started really to implement in practice this European directive. There are countries like Romania or Bulgaria where constitutional courts already declared that this practice is unconstitutional. And there are some countries that collect lesser and some countries, on the other hand, bigger amount of data related to the communication. So there is more like a difference in actual practice than in that national legislation.
Philip Pospíšil of the watchdog Juridicum Remedium explaining how data retention by mobile phone operators and internet providers can violate people's right to privacy. Now time to hear from the One World Festival currently underway in Prague.
I stopped trying to define punk around the same time I stopped trying to define Islam. They aren't so far removed as you'd think. Both began in tremendous bursts of truth and vitality, but seem to have lost something along the way. Michael
Muhammad Knight, the voice of Michael Muhammad Knight from the film Taqwa Core, which is being screened in the One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries in Prague. The film focuses on young American Muslims who have embraced rebellious punk rock music, leading to disapproval from some of their community. Ian Willoughby spoke to its director, Omar Majid, who is Pakistani-Canadian, and began by asking about the origins of the style described in the documentary as punk Islam.
Punk Islam has been around for a long time. There's been punk bands in Malaysia and Indonesia and the Middle East. Metal is very big in the Middle East. But this particular idea, this version of it, which we call Taqwakor, came about when this white guy in America named Michael Muhammad Knight, he had converted to Islam as a teenager. He'd kind of fallen out of it for a while, gotten into punk, and then he decided, what if you took the best parts of Islam and the best parts of punk? What would that look like? And he wrote this novel called The Taqwa Course, and he came up with this term. And the book was just a novel, but it became a kind of an inspiration amongst young Muslims in North America. And then a nascent scene has just started to emerge over the last few years, and that's what this film has been trying to capture.
Generally speaking, what is the politics of these groups?
It varies. And the thing about Taqwa Core is it's a very wide spectrum. So you have people in this community who are, who are quite spiritual, and you have people who are not so spiritual, but, maybe more connected to their roots or their culture. You have people who are, making music that is very political about the situation in the Mideast, or political in terms of talking about how Muslims are targeted in the West, like through Homeland Security and stuff like that. And then you just have other people, musicians, who are just trying to be more funny or satirical, like a group like the Kaminas, who are like these Punjabi punk rockers from Boston. You know, they sing these very provocative songs making fun of terrorist stereotypes. So they'll sing songs like Suicide Bomb the Gap, or Sharia Law in the USA, and it's a typical punk trying to be, kind of rude and provocative to get in your face with their ideas, you know, and playing, like, throwing the stereotype back at you, basically, you know?
In the film, these groups go together on tour around some U.S. cities. Mm-hmm. Then some of them go to Pakistan. Yeah. Could you describe how they're received in both countries?
Well, I think it's a very positive film, I think, in many ways, in the way it shows how Muslims can navigate, you know, some of their issues within their community and outside their community. And I think in both places there are different challenges, but ultimately they were received fairly positively in both places. Interestingly enough, in America, when they go to a Muslim convention, the organizers of the Muslim convention get them thrown out because they don't like what they're doing, but they connect to the audience, which is a fascinating sort of moment. It's like a kind of a generational thing. You know, the older generation kind of want to put control on things. It's the same old story, right, as like rock music in the 50s or something, right? In Pakistan, the challenge was a little different because the feeling was, how can we connect to a culture that doesn't really have something like an underground in the way that we have here, and building that up organically. But, I mean, it there as well, we really had to break through mostly issues about class and gender. But when we were able to, I think, do that, which I think shows that there is an appetite for this in the Muslim world.
Omar Majid, the director of Taqwa Corps, was speaking to Ian Willoughby. And Ian will have more from the One World Festival of Human Rights documentaries in Friday's program. Now, if you're looking for a car and want something truly out of the ordinary, have a listen to this. It's been 60 years since the legendary Czech three-wheeler Velorex first took to the road. Ridiculed by some and admired by others, the curious vehicle soon gained many fans around the world. Now, the legend is back. On Wednesday, a luxurious remake of the vehicle was unveiled at a car show in Brno. Jan Richter has the story.
A tent on wheels, a fleeing trench coat or a bat. These are some of the more affectionate names given to Velorex, Czechoslovakia's answer to the post-war shortage of cars. Velorex, or the King of Wheels, was a two-seat three-wheeler consisting of plastic sheets stretched over the steel tube cage powered by a Yava motorcycle engine. It was originally intended as a vehicle for the disabled, but soon gained enormous popularity. Although its production ceased in the early 1970s, fan clubs dedicated to Velorex exist to this date, both in the Czech Republic and abroad. Pavel Brida, the head of a small motorbike producing firm in Opava, is a big Velorex fan and the owner of a 1950s model. A couple of years ago, his love for the legendary vehicle made him come up with a new, updated version of the three-wheeler, which was unveiled at the Motosalon car show in Brno on Wednesday.
The basic features they have in common include a motorcycle engine with chain transmission. That's really the fundamental feature of the three-wheeler. Also the slanted rear body, the door shape, and of course spoked wheels. So the new model has many features that evoke the old Velorex.
Mr. Brida says he wanted the new Velorex to be more powerful, stronger and safer. The streamlined, revamped new model, called Velor X Strike due to copyright issues, is powered by a 1300cc Honda engine. It's longer and heavier, with a whole new body. And it's also much faster. It can go up to 200 kilometers per hour.
We paid special attention to safety. We considered the ideal weight, length and width of the three-wheeler carefully and incorporated a number of EU-approved elements, like seats, four-point seat belts, and so on.
Pavel Brida launched the new Velor X Strike in Brno together with the designer of the original Velor X, 86-year-old Mojmir Stránský, who told reporters he appreciated the new take on his original three-wheeler. But unlike the old tent on wheels, the new model is more of a luxurious toy, tailor-made for individual clients. Mr. Birida says his company will only produce some 5 or 6 vehicles a year at a price of around 500,000 crowns.
Jan Richter reporting there. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. The Czech men's national ice hockey team enjoys considerable popularity and lots of media attention. But what about women's hockey? Find out more in this week's edition of Panorama with Sarah Borufka.
The women's hockey club HC Slavia Praha last season recruited 3 foreign hockey players, 2 of them from a Canadian and 1 from an American university team, to help boost the level of women's hockey here in the Czech Republic. Julia Bronson, Stephanie Jones, and Carson Duggan have just finished a successful season with their team, which won the Czech League, and are now heading to the women's hockey finals that are about to take place in Berlin. I asked the 3 players about their experience here, the future of women's hockey, and how they first started playing.
I started playing hockey at 5 and have been playing ever since. Myself, along with the other 2, we've all played university hockey on scholarships. We've also been able to play on the junior national teams or have trials with junior national teams.
So how about you, Julia? What was your start like in hockey?
I actually have a similar story. I started when I was 5 years old. And then I also played in the university, and now we're here playing.
And what about you, Carson?
I started, I think, when I was about 8 or 9, and played all minor hockey, and then got a scholarship and played university and brought us to Prague.
And what brought you to Prague? I mean, the Czech Republic is pretty famous for hockey, but it's still quite a leap from the U.S. Stephanie?
After graduating from university, I was just kind of looking for something to do with my hockey career. And once you're done university for women's, there's not a whole lot of options. So started looking around Europe because there's a couple different leagues and just fell into Prague. Just got in contact with the manager here and ended up here.
And what did you know about the country, Julia, before you came here? Was there anything that you knew about it?
I knew Jaromír Jágr was from Czech Republic.
And then once you came here and you touched down in Prague, Carson, what did you first think, or did you have a night out? Did you get to experience the culture at all?
It's kind of funny, actually. One of our first days here, we got a tour of the city, and we were out in Kralupy, which is a small town outside of Prague, and we trained in and started a tour, and we came up the steps at Wenceslas Square, and just coming off those stairs and seeing the statue and seeing that street with the museum and everything, it's a gorgeous city.
And Julia, I understand that your trainer doesn't speak English, and now you guys haven't yet had the chance to learn Czech, and I imagine it would be quite hard to learn it this quickly. How do you communicate?
It's funny you ask that. Well, we like to use a lot of charades at times, but we actually have one other teammate on our team who's bilingual, and so she will literally sit in the locker room with us and translate everything that he says. And then if he warrants a response, then she'll dictate from us, pretty much. And other than that, we don't really have, besides smiles and winks, that's about all the communication we can handle.
What about the other teammates, Stephanie? Do some of them speak basic English, so you have this whole team spirit going on? Or is it literally just on the level of smiles and gestures?
No, there's definitely a handful of girls that can speak a limited amount of English, enough so we can have a kind of a basic conversation and we can get some jokes back and forth. So then there definitely is a team atmosphere, even with us, even with the language barrier, we still have that kind of team atmosphere in the dressing room.
And you played one season so far with the hockey club Slavia Praha. How was that so far? How was the season? What was the highlights, lowlights, in-betweens?
I'd say the season has gone really well. I mean, we won the Czech League, and we're going to the finals in Berlin at the end of this weekend. But in terms of the only low lights I would say is the fact of the inability to speak normally, like a normal conversation. But, I mean, we do manage, and, you know, you'd be surprised about how universal some things are. And so, I don't know, we've had, like, a great time. A lot of players are good here, and we wish we could help them even more in terms of hockey, just because it's a different type of hockey that we're used to, although we're learning a lot from them also.
That was actually one question I had, is maybe Carson, you can answer this. How does American hockey, women's hockey, differ from European hockey? Are there some major differences?
Obviously, the probably the biggest difference is the body contact. In guys' hockey, there's the body check-in stuff. And in women's hockey, there's still body contact, but no open ice stuff. So along the boards, there's still a little bit of hitting. But so that opens up hockey for you, the skills, the bigger showcase for the skills and skating. In guys hockey, it's obviously more physical, so in women's hockey they focus more on the skills and the skating.
And would you say, Stephanie, that women's hockey is one of the women's sports that has more of a following, or is it rather unusual here for hockey to be followed?
I think that women's hockey here is just kind of starting to get noticed and recognized a little bit. Like, now that women's hockey's been in the Olympics for a couple years, I think people are starting to see it more and it's being more recognized as a sport. But I think that's definitely growing. I think North America is a little bit ahead in how common women's hockey is. But that's something that's just going to take time and people recognizing that a lot of women do play hockey here and that they do have a lot of great women hockey players.
And in terms of finance, I know in the U.S. it's fairly established to have a scholarship if you're an athlete. Over here, obviously, you just came to play for the team. You're not on a scholarship. Do you get paid for your work, or do you find yourself having to find other sources of income too, Julia?
A little bit of both in response to that question. We do get some financial payments, mainly to cover like living and things like that. And we also do have a job on the side at a preschool nursery type deal.
And I believe you're going to Berlin this week. Is it in about 4 days you're going to be playing the finals in Berlin? You looking forward to that?
Yeah, we take off on Thursday, and there's the top four teams in Europe, so it's us along with Berlin, Russia, and Finland. And we're going to be in tough, but there's going to be great hockey, and I think if we all put the right games together, we should be successful.
During the season, how much of your day goes to just having to train and prepare, Stephanie?
Well, we practice about 3 times a week, and each practice is an hour. And then we have 1 to 2 games per week. And then on top of that, we try and make it to the gym or go for a run as well. So we're going to be in good shape going into the games.
You guys are also roommates, all the three of you. So does that sometimes become a bit intense if you're playing together, working together, and then on top of that, living together, Julia?
Actually, it worked out perfectly. Our personalities mesh unbelievably. So I think we all balance each other out and haven't had any problems even while playing. We all three of us play on the same line also. So we really, I think it might have helped our game more so than hindered it.
And do you plan to stay here? Do you like it here so far? And can you see yourself becoming involved in women's hockey in the Czech Republic in the long term, Stephanie?
I've really enjoyed my time so far. I haven't really decided exactly what I'm going to be doing in the future. I think it would be tough to continue or have a long-term thing with Czech hockey right now just because of the language barrier, and just having to teach things would be tough with only English.
And how is the Czech Republic measuring up against the U.S. when it comes to beer?
Oh, they have exceeded. They have exceeded. I think one thing we've really enjoyed in Czech Republic has been the beer. Staying true to hockey players, we enjoy our beer, definitely. I think Czech Republic has had the best beer I've ever had. Yeah, very happy with the beer.
Does that help the communication, Julia?
I'd like to say it definitely helps it. A lot of our teammates also who claim that they don't know any English by the end of the night are speaking perfect English. Yeah. So, and apparently I might know a few sentences in Czech, but it's definitely been awesome and it's helped.
You were listening to Panorama with Sarah Borufka, and I'm afraid our time is up. You'll find us online at radio.cz. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and take care.